listener. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this Waru Desho podcast. We are so happy to have the pleasure of your company today. If you've listened to us before and like our show, you might be wondering how you can support us, since we won't take your money. This podcast will continue to be free, but if you'd like to show your appreciation, please consider leaving us a rating and review on iTunes, as those help our discoverability. If you don't use iTunes, that's fine too. You can follow us and like and share our content on SoundCloud, YouTube, and Twitter. Additionally, we love getting your feedback, positive or negative. Tweet us at WaruiDesho or email us at waruidesho@gmail.com. Whether or not it gets read on the show, I can assure you, we all read every tweet and email you send us. And once again, dear listener, we thank you so much. Now please, enjoy the show.
Hello, ladies, gentlemen, and envies. Welcome to Waru Desho's Stream of Thought, after a brief hiatus, as it happens. We've had a shirkster amongst our midst who's decided, you know, to do the horrific crime of spending time with his family. I'm, of course, speaking to my stalwart companion, as always, the Soul Doxer.
Heyo. Glad to be back. Glad to be back.
Really?
Thank you for putting up with our absence, everyone who's still managed to stick around.
It's all right. I've been, streaming to legitimately bought games on emulators. Fantastic. I mean, it's technically anime. It's close enough. It works.
Oh, yeah. PSO. PSO. You're not playing the online one. PS4.
No, sadly not.
It is very anime.
It absolutely
it's
is.
It's amazing.
It is pretty great. Feel free to check out the VODs if you want, folks. Yep. But of course, we're actually now back, of course, to talk about Banana Fish and... Yeah, this was a... Banana Fish has been described... I would describe it as dynamite thus far, like with the amount of stuff that's been dropping and the horrible things that happen. And it's like, oh, I'm sorry, did you think that we were going easy on you? Well, you know, let's upgrade this to something nuclear, shall we? You know, let's get this, you know, up to 11, as it happened. So, just ahead of time, folks, we have a word of the day here for this particular episode, and that word is Yamero. If I didn't mispronounce that, because I think that's like the word that
it
gets
took me
said,
a
like...
minute, but yeah,
because it's like yeah, because that's literally it describes the episode perfectly. Also, one mild bit of housekeeping while I'm here, and I am currently incredibly bonged cold. So if I sound like, you know, a horsefly that's dying or something like that, then that's why.
Sorry.
Also, if I
Yeah,
this guy was the one who actually mailed me the cold. He sent me in a little care package, you know.
I'm perhaps this is a southern thing, but whatever misfortune befalls a friend, you, whether or not you're the cause of it, you say that you are sorry that it is happening to them, regardless if you are culpable.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we're going to move on to the actual episode now, which is called Save Me the Waltz. However, I am actually going to backtrack slightly, because we also need to cover the Twitter polls from the, you know, all the many moons ago when we last covered Banana Fish. Let's go through them. Doc, I believe you have them handy at the moment.
Twitter poll.
That's right. So, Twitter polls for episode 8. These were posted in way back in the balmy days of August 27th.
Yeah.
So, would you sign up for Yulung's acupuncture appointments? 59% of the audience said yes.
I would totally be up for that just to put me to sleep. I mean, that, you know, sleeping pills, getting, you know, completely wasted. Nah, just stick a pin in your neck and it'll now sort you out. Get out cold.
I know, man. Yes, for that reason too. I mean, for many reasons, but that's a big one.
Fair.
Like, guaranteed sleep. I mean, sign me up yesterday. Should Dawson have destroyed banana fish? Should scientists eliminate new discoveries, even if they are only if they are only harmful, meaning, like, yeah, if they're only going to cause misfortune? This is a landslide-ish. We're veering into landslide-ish territory.
Ooh.
78% of the audience said yes.
Fair enough, then.
22 sided, and I think this is one I think it's fair. Like, you make a fair argument, even though I have my misgivings about it. So, but so the 22% that say no, we're still cool. I mean, you and I are still okay. Just so you know, not like you with airplane, not that kind of situation.
To be fair, I got actually completely, you know, undone by Alex Schmidt, who currently is, you know, being big in Japan. Shouts to Alex, because he made a very good point, which is that you could use that as, you know, your inroads to become friends with someone. I'm like, okay, you got me there, mate. You're entirely right.
Mr. Schmidt is our by day, he is our Wario Desho's chef in residence, our official chef of Anti-Twitter. By night, he is the DJ in residence of Anti-Twitter.
He's a very talented man.
He is. Alex is a cool dude. BioD42, if you'd like to follow a cool dude.
Write some good stuff as well.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. That's my fault for not mentioning his writing. He's a talented writer. Our final poll. No. Yeah, no, it is our final poll. I don't even remember what this is referring to.
Go on. Try it.
Golzine or the old man from Kaiji?
A bit ambiguous, I will admit. Like, which one do you like more or hate more? Like, I'm gonna.
But I love ambiguous polls. I love ambiguous polls so much. It's great.
It's a trap.
So this is a 2/3 of the audience said Golzine, while 33% went with the old man from Kaiji.
I'm going to assume that this is, you know,
recency
like
bias.
Well, there's recency bias in it. But I'm thinking that maybe, you know, the secret question here was something like, you know, who would you most likely not want to go out with coffee with, you know? Because, I mean, the Kaiji guy, like, you know, he's got a predilection for taking people's fingers off. But he's not Golzine, as we'll learn very much so in this episode. Oh, God.
I mean, you'd almost prefer the straightforwardness of, you know, getting your finger in the cigar shaver.
Yeah, and also the fact that, you know, the guy from Kaiji looked like he was at least 130 years old.
That too, yes.
Like, he was immediately evil, whereas Golzine, you know, he could pass for maybe, you know, a golf commentator, perhaps, or something like that. I don't know.
A golf commentator?
Yeah, just see him sat down there talking about, like, you know, putting him, you know, under par and all that.
I think, like, he's always dressed like a ship's captain. Like, if you stick a hat on him, he could be a cruise ship captain.
You're entirely right. All right. I'm just going to say as well up front, folks, that I kind of sort of hate Doc a little bit right now. Not legitimately, mind you, but there's a reason for that. Because, well, you might recall, like, when we did Frank's, that, you know, I was the one who had to sing that piece of crap out on the last episode. And it's getting kind of like Red Letter Media style now, where, you know, sometimes you end up with a humdinger that you have to talk about and you're going to hate it, but you got to do it anyway. So, unfortunately, it's fallen to me to describe the events of this episode. Save me the waltz.
Boy.
And there aren't going to be very many jokes or sighs in this for reasons that if you've seen the episode, very clear, and if you've not...
I mean, I'll try. I'll try to add
a little bit of humor. I have a few lined up here, mainly because I like taking the piss out of Arthur, because taking the piss out of Arthur, you know, is part of the fun of watching this show.
An evergreen comedy tree.
Well, it's just too easy. He looks like a complete moron for a start. Okay, so, to the actual episode. So, last time on Banana Fish, everything went horribly wrong. And this time, Banana Fish, everything's going to go horribly, horribly wrong as well. It's this show at this point, to be quite honest. But we start off with Golzine arriving at the waiting lounge where Shaw and AG are, along with Arthur. So, you know, all the players are starting to assemble, all the pieces are coming together. A bit of back and forth between, you know, Shaw and Arthur, you know, everyone's giving him Arthur shit, and I'm like, yeah, you keep on going. Unfortunately, Shorter is stops, you know, from actually making good on the promise he had last time where he said, you touch him, I'll kill him and I'll kill myself. Didn't happen, unfortunately. He was restrained. Shorter is then led away, but not before Arthur twists the knife a little bit by saying, oh yeah, AJ, that's after he wakes up, of course. Do you want to know who betrayed you? Who sold you out? It's that guy. Oh, that's Shorter. He betrayed you. Yep, stuck the knife in. And Shorter, I mean, like, AG, like, to be fair to him, is like, you know what? I don't believe a fucking word you say, Arthur. It could be raining outside and you tell me the streets are wet and I still wouldn't believe you.
This is a fucking knife but twist.
It is a knife twist.
God, fucker.
But unfortunately, you know, even a broken clock is right twice a day. So he is telling the truth. And with context admittedly, but, you know. And
I mean, yeah, you don't have time to explain.
Oh, he's not going to explain. Of course, no. Arthur's not going to explain. He's not going to say, oh, actually, no, it was because
we draw you a diagram of what happened. No.
Yeah. Let me. Here is my prepared PowerPoint presentation. It's 64 slides long. It's got a couple of my holiday snaps in there as well. Okay, anyway.
You know, there's a wrestler, a Japanese wrestler who I quite like.
Ding, 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 ding. I was waiting for you to say that. I was waiting for you to say Japanese wrestler. I knew it was coming. I was waiting for it. And I think that's about 10 minutes in, folks. New world record. I kid. Carry on, man.
He incorporates PowerPoint presentations into his character in an extremely humorous manner.
That's amazing. Is he a fan of the Star Wipe? Is he a fan of the Star Wipe? I've got to know. Is he a fan of the Star Wars?
Well, I'm so new to this promotion, DDT, that I'm not sure. I don't recall him using it in his last presentation, which was it involved. So he's giving this presentation, might I add, publicly to a large, you know, audience that is in attendance for this wrestling show about how he's going to trap his opponent during his entrance to the ring. Now, his opponent, of course, can hear all this backstage, but he is telling it to the audience as if he could not. Very cute. But it's the PowerPoint presentation was all about how long the entrance is and where the person would be during the entrance. And so,
how many stock images did it have? Was it completely full of them? One of them, amazing. Did one of them have hosted by GeoCities on it or something like that?
Well, he used the clip art of bear traps because he set several cardboard bear traps for this guy, which were deftly avoided, even though his opponent didn't. yeah, you should. You definitely should.
Oh, fuck. All right. So, unfortunately, though, AG looks at Shaw and says, tell me you didn't do it. Tell me you didn't do it. Shaw can't respond. And obviously, you know, that is an answer of itself. And he's then let out. AG is left behind. Luk Young is there, by the way, who it turns out has actually been given by his brothers as a present to Golzine. Luk, of course, you know, he's all smiles and all that, but clearly he's like, fuck, I ain't letting this man touch me. Not a fucking chance.
I mean, familial bonds, right? Thicker than water and all that jazz.
Yeah. That's not going to come and bite the Chinese in the back in this show. I'm sure that Luk's going to take this totally on the chin and he's going to be like, oh, it's okay, bro. I mean, you literally sold me to a guy, like, you know, who, well, he rapes people in dungeons and all that, like, you know, for funsies before he goes out for, you know, a bit of polo at the country club. So, yeah, I'm totally cool with that. I can totally see Luk be that. But fortunately, because the show's evil and the people who make it are evil, I really do think that they are criminals, they end the opening section on a scene of Golzine cupping AD's chin, and I'm like, oh, fuck. This is going to be it. I'm going to be feeling fucking dirty by the end of this. Soiled. No
Such
amount.
Pain. Such pain.
No amount of Head and Shoulders will scrub my scalp clean. Because it's just going to be fucking dirt all the way through. Oh, boy. So, after the OP. Just checking my memory here, unfortunately. I did rewatch this, but I'm just reminding myself. Ash and Max and eBay are being shipped in by planes to New York, and they're due to arrive fairly shortly. Meanwhile, Golzine, you know, to show that he's actually just a regular person, he's actually reading the newspaper, presumably going through the crossword, or possibly the Sudoku. I don't know.
He likes to keep... He has to keep sharp. He has a syndicate to run, you know?
Well, that's true.
Stay flexible upstairs.
Maybe he's looking at his horoscope, you know. Today you will make a successful business deal. Dick.
Or he's checking and make sure his ad for underlings is printed the way he wants to, you know. Crime boss seeking underlings must be douchebag, must, you know, be able to watch two people that love each other kill each other before your eyes and laugh maniacally into the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
Please,
must be flexible.
Send resume.
Non-union.
That's right. This is not a union. Not a union shop, you bastards.
Yeah, exactly. Arthur's there with him, and they have a bit of back and forth banter, in which Arthur points out, you do realize that Luk Young, like, is very clearly, you know, what we call a penis flytrap in the industry. Like, you know, he's definitely, you know, he's there to backstab you.
The poison bait.
And Golzine's like, mate, I wasn't born yesterday. Come the fuck on, Arthur.
But I'm still going to partake of the forbidden fruit.
Well, you know, might as well while he's there.
Wait. Hmm? Okay, I had to play the sound cue. Terribly inappropriate of me, horrible thing to do. But at least, I mean, fuck it. I mean, it's so, like, I guess it's better than playing Let's Get It On when talking about, you know, someone like Asia. We're talking about Yu Leung is very much, like, he's willing, he's in on it.
I didn't
because
even hear
he
that
has his own, he has his own agenda.
I had to fill it in, and I honestly thought it was going to be like some sort of two-seat horn or something. Like the kind you hear on pickup trucks. Anyway, so Golzine's all like, right, okay, Ash is coming back. I owned him, polished him, combed his hair. Oh yeah, I also fucked him with eyes. Said, but he's mine, he belongs to me, and I'm going to make sure he knows it.
Telling Arthur, like, you wouldn't understand. Like, boy, I mean... It's kind of amazing to think about, like, a human being feeling that sort of sense of ownership over another human being.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of incredible. I mean,
yeah.
I, like, as a dad, like, I certainly don't feel that kind of ownership over my kids. Like, and I mean, he doesn't, of course, talk about the sex, but he's, you know, it's like, I raised them, I created them, like, I gave him education, I gave him everything, and, like, I mean, so dads could reasonably say they gave those things to their kids, but, like, this still, you don't... I mean, he really does think, like, you know, he owns this kid. For some reason, I was...
Well, the thing is, right...
I was almost going to be like, your soul is mine, but then I just kept thinking of Shang Tsung from the Mortal Kombat movie, and I was like, I can't say that. What's a different thing I could say?
The thing about Golzine, though, is that he clearly has never watched any Siegfried and Roy in his life, because... You cage an animal up, and eventually it will want to break out. And what's it going to do when it breaks out? It's going to maul you the fuck to death. I mean, it's not like he's comparing Ash to, like, you know, a predatory cat or anything. Oh my god, he is. Who the fuck? So, hey. You know, that's not going to bite him in the ass.
Never.
Anyway. So, guests have arrived, apparently. And then we cut to a scene that immediately made me pause the video because I started piecing together what was going to happen next. And I was like, oh, fuck. No. I knew as soon as I saw this laboratory seed with Shaw tied up in a chair with leather belts, I was like, oh, you absolute bastards. And by which I mean the people who made the show and, of course, the original writer. Because I immediately pieced it together. They're going to drug him up. Of course they are. You know, they're either going to do it for funsies or they're going to do it for something else. But basically, he's getting shot up. Great. Fucking amazing. So there's a bit of back and forth here between Shorter and what was Carrot Top's name again? I can never remember.
Abraham.
You're dead man walking there. I mean, this guy's, like, you know, already spent more lives than he technically has. Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
Like, you're out.
Oh, he is so done. Like, dig his grave. Do it now.
Make it deep. Or make it very small, because there probably won't be much left of him when everyone's done with it.
Yeah. It's gonna be just a Just a nothing. Just a little tiny marker.
Yeah, pretty much. Here lies a fuckwit.
Yeah, here lies, like, I mean, this fucker, his rationale, by the way, for, like, doing what he did to the soldiers was, I had to, like, just like with Dino's sense of control, I was just sort of taken aback. I was like, do people really do such cruel things to other people for such petty reasons? Is it incredible? Like, he felt entirely justified in everything that he did because they laughed at me. Like, I'm saying bullying's okay, but, like, Christ almighty. I mean, we'll get there, but, man.
We'll get there. I mean, so, eventually, Arthur and Golzin arrive, and, as you might expect, Shorter, he doesn't, unfortunately, get a say in the matter. He's having his jabs, and it ain't, you know, the flu shot. It is the new version, perfected, that is, of banana fish, which, to reestablish for people who might join us with lateness, you basically reprogram people with it. Makes a blank slate, and you can tell them, okay, I want you to go run in circles for the next 5 days, and they'll do that on that spot. And then when that happens, they've done, assuming they've not, you know, passed out or anything at that point, then they just, you know, give up and kill themselves, or break, as they describe it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you'd think, like, that the technology they were trying to develop it to, like, create sleeper agents, but it really does seem like an assassination kind of, I mean, like, I guess, like, I kind of, like, this test sort of unsold me on the utility of it, because, like, if they're going to be like a blubbering mess and be like, I just can't drool, huge out. Like, not like they can go back to their ordinary life, like, until they hear the code word or see the person that they're meant to kill. And it's not like they're going to stealthily do it. They're just going to, like, knock everything out of the way to run to the person and stab them.
I was of the opinion in the previous episode that if they, I mean, this is entirely speculation, probably won't be borne out. But if you, like, the thing I suggested was, you know, you drop it upstream in a river, comes downstream, villagers drinking water, you drink it there, and then, you know, everyone goes nuts. There's probably applications for it. Although, that being said, like, I am now imagining, you know, like, some soldier somewhere with a blowpipe, and he's got, like, a little dart full of banana fish. So, who knows? Apart from just actually drugging Shorter up, they're, of course, going to do this in the most cruel and evil way possible, because Golzin, you know, George R. R. Martin fan that he is, has decided he's going to, you know, be especially vindictive to Ash to put him in his place. So, what follows next is that AG is brought in. And as Shorter's getting drugged up and he's having his mind, you know, turned into so much spaghetti, AG is held down in front of him and Abraham says, this guy, he's your enemy. He's going to get you. Don't stop him. Tear his guts out. Gotta fucking kill him. Now kill him. Like that. Just, you know, green my worm tongue his way, you know, in there. And Shorter indeed does lose his shit. AG is taken away. In the intervening time, by the way, there's a brief insert scene that I forgot to mention.
This was interesting.
Which I'm interested as well. But so, Golzin, thankfully, is interrupted before he gets to have his wicked way with AG and Lot at the same time.
Oh, you're talking about a different scene. Okay.
Yeah, I think that was, like, came after, actually. Sorry, I'm getting my events back to forth here. But,
it's okay.
Yes. Turns out that's happening now.
He didn't wait long to get right down to it.
He doesn't strike me as a particularly patient man, Golzin, when he gets down, you know, when he won. I mean, who knows what of that player is like, you know, all right, maybe some horrible scrap into this kid, but I'll be fun with him first. By the way, a couple of gangs do witness Ash's arrival in the city at the airport, which will be important later. But for the moment, let's talk about this scene. So, Golzin gets up and leaves, thank Christ, before anything actually happens. Then starts, you know, teasing AG a little bit. In the intervening time that Golzin was on the way out, Lut observes the key code on the keypad that allows him to escape.
Yes.
And when I say that, however, only he escapes. Now,
yep.
My old issue here, like, they obviously took AG from somewhere to bring him to later, you know, to where they end up later in the dungeon. But how did they not notice Lut was gone? Like, did they not find that a bit strange?
Well,
I don't know.
Perhaps
it'll come clear next episode. Yeah. I suspect. Well, so it's minor.
Yeah, yeah. Here's what I would. Here's a plausible solution, right? I would say that, like, perhaps the people retrieving Yulong, retrieving Eiji, might not be aware that, you know, Yulong is also in there. Like, I don't know. Like, you would maybe you wouldn't need to know because it wouldn't be Dino Golzin who was going to get them, right? It would be like, send, you know, James to my suite to get Eiji. Here's, you know the code. And that's that. I don't know. But I don't know. Now that I'm thinking about it, perhaps that doesn't hold water. I don't know.
It doesn't really matter. If anything, I actually prefer the idea that Lutz snuck out. Because if he did sneak out before, you know, Eiji was taken away, then that raises a question. Why did he not take Eiji with him? Because if he had done that, everything that follows would have been avoided.
Well, he doesn't like Eiji, first of all.
Well,
so he says. So he says, I'll say. Mm. You know, it's just, well, he says that he irritates him, right? Whenever he tells him it's time
to
face reality.
He's also not cruel or capricious to him when he's actually still pinned down.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah. But maybe, but anyway. You know, I think he's escaping to, like, cause trouble and shit. And Eiji can't sneak around with him.
God.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Be like Mr. Magoo sneaking around a building.
You're right. You're actually entirely right. So, yes, after Lutz escapes, it's the dinner scene. And Woo! The dinner scene, man.
So they were captured and taken to this dinner, right?
Once they were shipped off the plane, yeah, they were brought here.
Okay.
Yeah, they were brought, like, because the guys who were taking them off the plane were, of course, Golzine's men, or at least they were under his pay. Mm-hmm. So, the dinner scene. We've got in attendance, we have, I believe it's Arthur, Golzine, Max, Ibe, and Abraham. I think he was the fifth person there, from my memory.
I don't think he was at the dinner, was he?
So it was someone else there.
It was Yulong was there.
Oh, that was it. Sorry, my apologies. Yeah. It was Yulong. Yeah, there we go. I don't know why I said Abraham. I was getting mixed up. Anyway, everyone's all dressed up because, you know, we've got to keep up appearances before everything goes really horribly wrong.
Arthur's hair.
Oh, dude, I'm going to get side a bit because there's something incredible that happens with his hair. That, man, I'll save that. I want to talk about it in a minute. But, so,
Ash
I have to say, though.
Too. Ash has good hair, too, in this scene. But, yeah.
I want you to put a pin in that thing about Ash because that's going to be one of my talking points later. But anyway, I will note also that Golzine is apparently wearing some sort of neckerchief that's got avocados on it. I mean, Jesus Christ, what? Wait. I know that he looks like a golf commentator, as I said before, but that doesn't mean he needs to look like he's dressed out in 1972. Although, to be fair, this was, you know, made in originally written in the 80s,
exactly.
So who can say?
Just
but yeah, avocado neckerchief. I don't know. What next? He's gonna do. He's probably gonna wear a suit. He's probably gonna have, like, you know, a suit next with peacocks on it, or something like that, which would actually be keeping his character, funnily enough, because he's, you know, a bit of peacock himself. But anyway, so they're eating. The dinner party is mostly focused around Ash arriving and Golzine complimenting him on his various things that he's been educated, reminding him of how he's brought him up. Like, okay, Ash, try this wine. What wine is it? And of course, we then get a diversionary 15 minutes of Ash swirling it, you know, racing the wine, and this becomes an entirely different show. No, of course.
Do you remember what year it was?
It was 63.
Nope.
Oh, fuck.
Come on.
Oh,
why
is
would
it
I
really
ask you
that
this?
Year? Is it really that year? Is it really that year?
It is.
Is it really that year?
The nicest of years.
Yes. Oh. In the context of the show, though, it's a bit grim, but hey.
Well, that's a good
get
point.
A bit, yeah. Anyway, we get a bit of verbal sparring between Arthur and Ash. Max and Ibe are very taken aback by how handsome Ash looks in, you know, his dinner suit with his hair put back in his slice suit, a little jade earring. The jade earring, by the way, being a symbol, I suppose, of, like, Golzine's possessiveness, because it's literally a label. Like, it might as well be like, you know, you belong to me and I'm going to, you know, mark you as such.
Right.
And so after, you know, all of the dinners,
$400,000 earring.
Yeah. So after the dinner, after the second most awkward dinner in crime anime, after the one in 91 days in which someone gets served as bolognese, like, I mean, that's still the peak of, like, awful, like, you know, awkward anime dinner scene. That one's wretched. A couple of goos with guns turn up. These are goals, these men. Right, show's over. Now we get to the fun stuff. And, ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce you to one of the most harrowing things I've seen this year so far. Oh, God. Like, man, where do I even begin? All right, actually, I will begin by saying that Lutz, who is wandering the mansion at this point, being all solid snake. no, really, he is a snake after all, so it would be appropriate.
Hey, yeah.
But he notices that there are guests arriving, and we have a Republican senator, we have a colonel. I have the feeling you might want to say something about this. Go on, Doc.
This is just what I was going to point out. Like, I mean, it is so funny that, like, that he was a Republican. I mean, it just made me laugh. I don't really have any grand point. I mean, do I think it's crazy that a Republican senator would be taking a meeting with an unsavory person if it meant, like, that he could get his hands on some kind of, you know, military weapon? I don't think that's crazy. No, not at all.
Doc, to throw it out there, plan. Get yourself a supply of banana fish, drop in a town's water supply. Town normally votes for a different party, the Republican. About a couple of ads after you poison the
water
supply.
Could they make it to the voting booth? Would they all just not be like slobbering maniacs?
Look,
like,
once the vote's posted, it's fine. It's fine. It means you have to rely on the Russians to do it, so there you go. I threw that one in, didn't I?
You. No, I would just have liked to have seen shorter. I mean, maybe the thing is that they've just beat him within an inch of his life, and so that's why he's otherwise kind of behaving weirdly. But I would have liked to have seen him, like, entirely sort of normal and then go. Whereas, like, I feel like as soon as he got the drug all the way through the rest of the episode, he was just, his behavior, again, just, it was so different and weird that I don't see how you could, like, use banana fish make a sleeper agent.
I think maybe it's more because of what they told him to do, specifically that they said, this guy's going to fucking kill you, and it would sound fair that he felt. If it was just something more innocuous, like, you know, go to the voting booth or go buy me a Subway, maybe. Then they probably wouldn't be, you know, quite so, you know, twitchy as Shaw turns out to be.
No, if you didn't tell them what kind of Subway, maybe they would. Maybe they'd be like, is it ham or turkey?
Did they want a footlong or not? I don't know.
Flatbread or regular wheat bread?
To answer your question, Emily, possibly. Quite possibly. That would be something. But anyway, I will say as well...
Good point.
That's a good point. That is a good point. Emily
there. If all the voters kill themselves...
I will say, though, like, when I saw these guys coming in, like, you know, like, Young's barking them out, my head cannon getting kicked in, and I started imagining people following him, like, Lex Luthor, Skeletor, Mr. Burns, the Grinch, various evil people. Like, I wanted a cut scene where we had these people coming in as well as sitting down up there, like, yes. Excellent.
Who's who of masterminds?
Smithers, what's his banana fish? well, sir, it's a drug that's invented to wipe people's minds. Excellent. See, it writes itself. Anyway.
Excellent. Smithers, deploy the banana fish.
I'm afraid we're out, sir. All I've got here is this banana, but we didn't actually get any fish. Anyway, Simpsons fanfic aside, let's actually get to talking about this scene that we don't really want to talk about because it sucks. And it's horrible.
Enough stalling.
I should stress, by the way, good way. It's a very well-written scene. It's very well animated. The music that starts playing, the long piano. It was like thumb screws, honestly.
Yeah.
It was just... So, However, again, because things are funny in this show occasionally when I don't know if they should be or not, the first thing we see is that Ash is tied up in this dungeon by chains, and Arthur's there telling them what's going on. And the first thing I notice, I mean, I'd be pissing myself. Arthur, his hair is now back to the way it was because he gets to be evil again.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing. It's literally his true colours. Like, the moment he gets to be a complete prick again and get all the formalities out of the way is when his hair goes back up to being like Dio's. I'm like, that's genius. Yeah. I love it.
He went Super Saiyan again. Like,
he did.
Just couldn't help it. It's like, fuck this dinner party.
took his necktie off as well, I should say. Like, he's like, I'm getting down to business here. Gonna slip the hair up. You know, make sure I look like a complete prick as I always do. Full bastard.
Now it's time for fun. So tie's coming off.
Yeah.
Casual.
So,
time.
Just to mention as well, Max and eBay are here. They're tied up and they're watching all of it. eBay is thinking to himself, shit, I need a new Patreon here for this. This is going too far. I don't think there's enough Patreon money in the world to be put in front with this shit, especially given what happens in a minute. I wonder if Max has a Periscope account he could film this in.
A new Patreon.
See, I'm really going to delay talking about what follows. I'm great. I'm stalling so hard. The boat anchors are on, baby. They are on.
Wow. Ah.
Well, anyway.
Max
so
should
Arthur...
be filming this.
No, he shouldn't. Anyway.
Should he not? As like a some kind of something to use in a trial? I don't know.
No one in that room is going to be in trial because they'll all be dead by the end of this show. Apart from our hero. I mean...
Maybe he could catch the senator.
Unless they literally want to put Golzine's severed head, like, say, the prosecution will rise and fall. Right here. Do you have anything to say? Crickets start playing. Anyway. So Arthur starts toying with Ash a little bit. They're having a bit of back and forth because... You know, Arthur is a little bit insecure, and by a little bit, I of course mean completely. Because, you know, he wants to prove he's better than Ash, and now he's got his mercy. He's going to enjoy this. He's going to, you know, play with him a little
bit.
That
was a little over the top.
Of course he.
Could all this be part of a plan? Once you describe everything, I'll go into more detail, but some of the things he does, I'm like, I can't imagine this was part of the script that you were given by Dino.
Of course it is, and he absolutely just thought, like, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to have a fun time doing this. I'm literally surprised he wasn't drinking the wine that was from the dinner, actually, while this was happening. Like, you know, and smashing the glass on the ground. But there is an interlude. So, catch your mind back to what happened earlier in the episode with the airport arrival and the gangs being there. So, we have a gang, Ash's gang specifically, who are all in some back alley somewhere, wondering what's going on. And then, I think it's Su Ying, arrives. Su Ying is a member of the Chinese mafia, Chinese gangs, rather. They mention about what happened with Shawstrom, that Shawstrom been banished. Now, Su Ying says...
This was the scene I like that I think is interesting, that I thought you were going to bring up before.
So Su Ying says, okay, guys, we know you're part of Ash's gang, and Ash is in deep trouble. Normally, we would follow, you know, the Chinese. You know, our proper, you know, head honchos, as opposed to Shawstrom. But we're behind Shaw on this. So what do you say we go and rescue them? We're going to go get them. We need you to work together with us. And Su Ying, like, he's not doing this necessarily, I think, for altruism, because there's certainly a way of his mannerisms that conveys this, like, maybe he's doing a power play of his own in mind. But we will find out soon enough, I suspect. But that's just to set that out for the next episode, so that way, you know, there's... Sing Su Ling, there we go. So... I'm absolutely terrible with names, honestly.
Oh yeah. I mean, anyway, you got much closer than I would have. Like, I didn't remember that he had a name. Yeah, this
should have written on my hand, but it would probably be really blurry by now.
This is one of those this is one of those times where I'm thinking, boy, like, I mean, this could be the miscalculation, right? Like in chat, Trickster, you know, said that Golzine. Is, you know, his obsession with Ash is so strong that it could be leading him to miscalculate. Part of me is thinking, well, this might be the thing that he didn't see coming, was that Shorter's gang would remain loyal to Shorter. And I mean, certainly now that he's been killed by all this, although people have seen this episode.
Of course they have, yeah.
If it gets out that Ash actually pulled the trigger, then actually, I don't know, maybe they have their bases covered. But then I'm like, well, did Dino plan this all along? Or is this a Wong Brothers special here? Like, are they fucking over Ash's gang here? Like, leading them to think they're going to join forces only to betray them later when they're not? So, yeah, it's all in play. But this scene definitely got me thinking, like, wow, like, possibilities. Either the bad guys have really, you know, missed something crucial in their planning, or this could be really, really bad for Team Ash.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, here's something really, really bad that's happening to Team Ash. So, after that scene, Shorter is brought into the room. Just to give you some context, by the way, folks.
Shorter! No.
Oh, that's Shorter, yeah. Just to give you some context, by the way, folks, the people I mentioned before, the Republican Senator and the Colonel, not Mr. Burns and Co, of course, because they're not
the
in
Colonel.
There. They're watching from a gallery up top with Golzine. So this is a practical demonstration
enjoying,
of Banana Fish's effects.
Enjoying the 69.
The wine.
That's, yes, the wine.
Anyway, moving swiftly on, as quickly as possible through this scene because it's awful. Shorter is brought in, and Ash first thinks, "Hey, good to see you, buddy." And then he's like, "Oh, you all right, mate?" And Shorter is twitching and quivering, sweating profusely, can barely even speak a coherent word. Says, "You know, I'm in pain. I'm in constant pain." And then AG is brought in. Now, here's the thing. Arthur takes AG, puts him right in front of Shorter and says, "Remember this guy that we showed you before? He's your enemy. You've got to kill him, tear his guts out." And this is happening, as I should stress, right in front of Ash and right in front of Max and eBay. Everyone gets a full, matinee viewing of everything that follows. Fucking great. And what happens then is that Arthur pulls out this like little switchblade and gives it to Shorter and says, "Go on, go fucking kill him." And then, of course, AG's like, "Shorter, please don't do this. I'm your friend," and all that. But it isn't happening. It isn't reaching it because, he's drugged up to the nines. And Shorter goes completely berserk. He's tearing into him. He's taking chunks out of him. Like, at the end of this scene, AG looks like he's been mauled by a fucking jaguar. Blood and all. Like, credit where it's due, right? What I really initially thought was going to happen when Shorter started attacking him was I thought, oh, AG is just going to, dodge all of this. He'll be fine. Like, he'll be close to peril, but he'll never really, truly be in danger. And then the episode was like, we're going to show you how close he is to dying because he gets cut up something for this. And that really, really helps to feel much more threatening. I otherwise would have thought I'd done it in a lesser show where they weren't really to show that kind of mortal peril he was in.
Yeah.
And of course, Ash is completely and utterly losing his marbles over this because it's like, Shorter, like screaming at him.
Mm-hmm.
And AG is also given a knife to fight back with. Whether or not he can or won't, I'm going to say Brick should both probably, to be quite honest. He probably wouldn't know which end of the knife to hold. And even then, he's certainly too timid to even try and do anything to Shorter.
He takes a knife fighting stance.
That's the best he manages, though.
He's got his, his palm and then the knife across the palm, like you're meant to do. So, at least the movies have told me you're meant to do it. I speak like I've been in a knife fight. And
are you talking about the old boy approach here, where you can learn everything from TV?
Yes, I've downloaded knife fighting from the Matrix, so I'm an expert.
Knifefighting.pdf.
Mm-hmm.
With complete contents page.
Yep. Authored by the internet.
What's the WikiHow page like that? I must have to look at that later. That's probably going to be something.
Four ways to knife fight your way out of trouble.
Mm-hmm. This is the, East Coast left and the West Coast right.
Right.
I don't know if those are actually things
if
or
you're
not,
a
by
South
the way.
Fucking
hell.
Man. Oh.
If you're Australian, You don't use a spoon. That's a really bad Australian accent, I'm sorry. Anyway,
I enjoyed it, as though.
As this is happening, of course, Ash is losing his marbles, and then Arthur, well, because he's, you know, one-upping himself constantly on being a colossal twat, gives him a gun. And he says, oh yeah, only one bullet in it. Choose wisely.
I mean...
And so everything kind of reaches a crescendo. That being said, Ash does manage to seemingly get through to Sharsa. And everyone seems to be taken aback.
Right? Yeah.
And like, Sharsa seems to stop like for a second. And he's like, end it. Please, end it. But then, of course, Arthur, you know, takes ages. Like, he's right here. Can kill him. And so Ash's chains are loosened so he can get hold of the gun as Sharsa has literally pinned AG down, is about to plant the knife between his eyes. And he shoots Sharsa right through the heart. By the way, just to really sell how awful all this is, just a couple of small touches, like when Sharsa is shot, fleck of his blood ends up on AG's face. Great. Max and eBay have the most appropriate reaction faces for this episode ever. God. Ash looks down at his hands, and like, we of course don't see anything on his hands, but you know full well that in his head he is envisioning them soaked in blood.
Yeah.
Because he has just had to kill his best friend. And it gets worse, because can you believe it? Like, it's been so long since I've seen a show where, you know, like, you are literally in the salt mines and they're just getting rubbed into your wounds as you watch this. Because after that happens, like, everyone's like, oh, splendid, that was a great show, amazing. And then Abraham, you know, carrot top fucking pencil dick that he is, says, what about if we dissected him and checked the brain out?
I mean...
And I'm like... That man is dying an agonizing death.
He's such a cartoonishly evil scientist at this... I mean...
Seriously.
Is it cartoony? I don't know.
It almost is. Like, if there was, like, lightning
streaking
the
straight
windows,
through the heart, we can preserve the brains. Isn't that exciting?
Fucking hell. But yeah, Shaw is taken away. Ash is screaming after him, saying, what do you do with him? Don't touch him. And that's the episode. Banana fish. Honestly, like, I said before off Cast the Doc, by the way, that there is a line that Golzine has when this is all happening where he says, now this is the true effects of banana fish. And this is something he says twice, as a matter of fact. One time when Shaw is screaming, and the other time when everyone's shocked and horrified at what's happening. And I'm like, that is meta. That is completely meta for the actual episode. Because I was like, nope. Tapping. Let me out. Let me out, please. I don't want to... Oh, fuck. And so, well, yeah. Like, end of disc one. Let's go on to the next chapter.
End of disc one! Yes, the life materia has fallen into the pool.
Yeah. Oh god, Aris's theme is playing. Someone make an
if
AI
I had it. If only I had it queued up, I'd be playing it right now. God.
Do 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 do. Yeah, exactly. You're Aris. Oh right. Let's do talking points then. Holy crap!
Our first Christmas together, I got my wife a piano songbook of Final Fantasy songs, and that was one of the ones she learned to play.
Excellent.
When we still had a piano. We had a piano in our first home, but we ended up giving that to, I forget who, but yeah. We no longer have it.
Quick shout out to Blue Sea Devotee, who's joining us in the chat here. Just to give you a quick update on what we, like, described in the episode so far, like, this episode was masochistic to me. Like, oh my god. I'll get to my rating later, but I will say up front, like, that this is a great episode, of course, but it's one of those things that's torturous to watch.
Yeah. Like, this is not going to be, like, not going to go in favorite episodes or, like, hey everybody, let's rewatch Banana Fish 9. You know,
yay!
Just like, hey everyone, let's go watch The Passion of the Christ. That's on.
Oh, like, fuck.
Great!
Nope. But yeah, like, fuck this. Anyway, we'll get to talking points now. Doc, would you like to go first, or do you want me to go first?
Talking points.
I'll go first. So I guess my first talking point is... Let me just breathe out here for a minute. Just rethinking through that. It's very hard. I guess I will... This is a little bit of a dampener in some ways. And has nothing to do with what makes the episode punch or work. But so you're, I think, often like you accuse yourself anyway of being like a nitpicker and raining on parades and thinking about like plot holes and sort of how kind of, you know, what am I trying to say? Like,
clinical.
Yeah, the narrative can become dissonant to you if obvious things aren't tried, or like there's some kind of little world building that's left out.
Funny you should say that, because you're actually going to bridge into one of my talking points later, because there's actually some discourse on the internet about plot holes as of late, which I want to address briefly when we get to it, but I'm going to save that for a later point. Anyway, carry on.
I don't use air quotes correctly. I think I might, you know, if people listen to a lot of our shows, I'm usually poo-pooing that, like, you know, like, who cares? Like, they did this stuff in service of the narrative or theme to, like, to kind of enhance, like, the emotional experience of the viewer. They wanted to evoke emotion. And so they were concerned with doing that. And I'm usually on the different side of the fence than you, but there's a part there. There's a whole thing in this episode where, okay, so I'll just say the banana fish test, right? For the senator and the colonel, like the things that Arthur did running the show down there. I feel like many of them were done to add to the emotional gut punch and to, like, you know, reinforce points to the audience or build up tension, that kind of stuff. Like when he would grab Aji's face and shove it in Shorter's face, he'd be like, look, this is the man. And then some stuff happens and he does it again and be like, but remember, this is the guy that you're supposed to kill. Don't you want to kill him? And like the thing with the gut, like if I am Colonel so-and-so or a Republican senator, unnamed portly Republican senator man, I would be like, yes, test of failure. I mean, you gave him the drug, Shorter. The guy walks in. Well, so I would be like, first of all, how do I know this shit is not rigged? I need to see a test where I know the principles.
It might have helped if they'd shown him actually being, you know, injected and then, you know, programmed firstly. Yeah. Maybe they got that on the Vimeo. I don't know.
But even then, they could rig that shit. You know what I mean? It could just be like, injected him with water and then have a guy that he wanted to kill in the arena and they have a knife fight. Like, but I mean, I'm sure, I don't know. That aside, that's like the lowest bar to clear. But like, there's just this other stuff of like I mentioned before, Shorter looks a mess. A mess. He's never going to be able to hide in society looking like that. And like the fact that Arthur had to like talk to him. I mean, imagine like that you know, put it on someone in the wild and you're like, kill Smith. And then after you inject him, and then you send Jones into the world. Are you telling me that someone has to grab Smith and shove Smith in Jones' face and say, look, it's Smith. Smith is the one you hate. Smith is the one you have to kill. Like, why could he not just have done without that?
If
the reason is that Shorter already has strong feelings for AG and Ash, then again, it's a failed test. Fuck that shit. I want to be able to use it to have people kill who I want to kill, regardless if they care about each other.
Well, There are a couple of specific things I can mention this, but I'll just speak in broad strokes about two things. First off, the intent of this actually isn't anything to do with the banana fish in general. This is essentially Ash's punishment. It just so happens that Golzine is, you know, doing a two-for-one thing of actually demonstrating the banana fish. But I think that if you ask Golzine to make a Venn diagram of what he's trying to do here, the vast majority have been putting Ash in his place. So all the theatrics from Arv and all that, I think, are the more important thing. Secondly,
that's fair, but that makes him a bad crime boss.
Well, that's the thing, that is, you know, that could very well be a flaw, much as we said before about how, like, you know, he has a blind spot for Ash. Secondly, this is establishing something that I have a feeling will become relevant later, in that banana fish is not flawless. Because Shorter does stop. Bear that in mind. That's why Arthur actually did it the second time. Like, he had to refocus him. He recognized, wait a minute. Why has he stopped? Why has he stopped, like, going for AJ? All right, I'm going to refocus his attention. But he did stop. I'm going to put a bet on for you right now. I'm going to bet this. In a later scene in this show, probably, like, say, towards the last quarter, AJ is going to be injected with banana fish against his will. Maybe, for example, Arthur gets hold of him, drugs him up, and says, right, this guy holds our Polaroid of Ash. You hate him. You despise him. He's done horrible things to you. Stuff like that. And then, cheesy as this will probably sound, when they finally bump into each other again, and AJ's just like throwing pots and pans and beer bottles at him or whatever, like, get away from me, you freak, you monster, whatever, because he's been drugged up. Ash will try and contact, you know, break past that again as he did with Shorter, but couldn't quite do it. Because, you know, there's a connection, an emotional connection between him. That's what shatters it. So it's actually been, you know, it's used also to establish that it's not infallible. That's the entire point. I mean, sure, like, the senators and all that, like, they're probably going to just get drip-fed this nonsense and they'll buy it, but, like, I think that that's the two big reasons why the scene plays out as it does.
So, yeah, well, I just
that's
kinda
my feeling.
I don't want that to happen. That wouldn't be satisfying to me. I don't know.
We'll see. I will see, but I think they wouldn't have established that, the you know, it was possible to break past banana fish without a reason for a payoff later on. Although that being said, the payoff could just be in the fact that, you know, that Shorter at least didn't go out entirely out of his mind. He had a moment of lucidity in which he was briefly himself again, even if in part.
That was the fucking worst scene in the whole show, in my opinion.
When you say worse, though, do you mean
No, I mean it was the most painful. Not poorly directed. It was, it was exactly as it was supposed to, but, like, yeah, no, it sucked real bad. I hated the show.
Man. This was like getting to Breaking Bad levels of shit where, like, horrible stuff's happening. Fuck. All right. Okay, so...
I mean, it's hard for me to think of... This is in, like, the top two or three worst sentences you could hear from someone that you're close to, that you care about, is I'm in so much pain. Like, I can't imagine, like, there are so... If there are many more sentences that are worse to hear from them, I mean, I don't know them, because, like, that
you
was
know,
just heartbreaking. It's fucking horrible.
You've just made me realize something, actually, that I should point out, and maybe this is, again, arguing from the null hypothesis here of, well, we did do it. But what I actually do appreciate in hindsight now is the show does not show anything from Short's perspective when this is happening. Like, okay, yeah, he talks and all that, but we don't see, like, a first-person view from him, like, you know, of how he visions everything, like, everything's blurry and all that. It's entirely for us to imagine how much pain he's in. And you can tell that he doesn't want to do any of it, but he's just, like, you know, almost like clockwork. I mean, in my home city of Manchester, there is two drugs going around at the moment. One of which is called Spice, and one of which is called Monkey Dust. Spice essentially leaves you as a wreck. Like, you cannot get anything out of a person who's had Spice. Not a thing. They are just lifeless zombies. Zombies is actually the word that the police have used to describe it. And Monkey Dust drives people fucking nuts. Like, people are scared to go out at night sometimes in certain parts of Manchester because of that.
Oh my
and
God.
This felt very... Yeah. And so what's happening with Banana Fish here felt very true to that. which will actually tie into a point we're going to get to in a later bit, but yeah, like, oof.
Jesus.
Fuck. Yeah, so it felt authentic to me the way it was portrayed. Apart from, of course, the fact that they were able to reprogram it with it, but, well, you know, it had to be something like that to make it stand out from all the other, you know, vanilla drugs out there. Oh, boy. Anyway, well,
like,
right.
Oh, God. Do you, like... How do you know? How do you know all this? I feel so because disconnected from like the local drug scene of Nashville.
It's in the news, and besides, I live close to city, so I keep like an eye out for it. In case you're curious, folks, the only drug I've ever consumed in my entire life is alcohol and anime, because anime is definitely a class A drug. And
that's true.
I mean, hell, when I was watching. When I was watching Macross Frontier, I just got a Blu-ray, ground it up, and, like, you know, then snored it through a straw. That's how I got my Macross hit.
You had to import it. It's the good stuff.
Oh, of course. It was premium. Cut that with the very credit card I used to buy it. But anyway.
Was it a replica of the Cheryl Gnome card that she uses in the movie that she throws at the S is... Fuck. Is it SDF or SDS?
It's the...
It's not
SMS because it's text message. That's the thing you should use to remember.
Right, that's right.
Yeah. Military provider or instant messaging service, you decide. But I know it's not. But you've given me an idea, you know, for what I'm going to do this Saturday. So anyway, right. So my talking point, the first one I want to get to. Oof, this is probably going to make people hate me, and it's probably going to make people question what I'm talking about.
Wait a minute. That's the case.
Go on.
You can't.
You say.
Continue without the sounder.
Next point.
You can't talk over the sounder.
Next point.
Continue.
All right. So what I'm about to say, like, first off, this is not like, feel free to disagree. I could very well be talking out of my ass, but just hear me out. Let's talk about tone for a second. And let's talk about tension. So Banana Fish as a show is two things, as I understand it. It's a crime drama. And it's a boil-up drama. I mean, there was a twist to the thing I saw recently that said, is it boil-up? And I'm like, look at the show. Look at the material. Like, Jesus Christ, it's so obvious. Like, I mean, one of the things I actually noticed in this episode is that every time the guys, like, gets this, like, you see, like, skin, like, around the neck area, you get to see very clearly defined shoulder blades and such. Like, this is very clearly based on, you know, something that was designed for that audience, you know, to get the full male form in. It's not like, you know, when you see flat blobs. So, okay. Yeah.
Well, I think people that ask that question, we've had kind of this discussion a little bit on the show, but it's sort of like asking a very specific question. I don't think that they're asking, like, is this show, does it have gay romance? I mean, that can be what they're asking. That's incredibly obvious, but I think that they're saying,
I'll have to admittedly research that, but the point I wanted to make was this, right? That's the two things it wants to do.
Yeah.
It wants to be both of these things. And I would argue, thus far, it's actually succeeded. Right up until it hit this episode, and then things kind of fell apart, and I'll explain why. So, when
How
you have two
you?
Disparate... Yeah, I do dare. Come at me. This is the point where I completely destroy any, you know, goodwill Banana Fish fans have towards us. I'm so sorry. But hear me out. So, here's the thing, right? Generally speaking, when you have themes in the show, the best way to get them narratively is to have them intertwine. And Banana Fish has done this so far. I commented previously about how, like, you know, with the way that Ash, you know, can't express his sexuality properly because of his, you know, being suppressed in this criminal environment, whereas the people in power do get to do so. It's a power play. It's essentially treating homosexuality or just sex in general as, you know, an act of possession, act of ownership. Mm-hmm. And that's the two themes marrying together, you know, where Ash learns that he can have, you know, an equitable relationship with another man that, you know, isn't based on, you know, ownership or power play or anything like that. So,
and again, previously I've also expressed misgivings about the fact that, like, that the what you're saying is right, that, like, he needs to learn that that kind of relationship can be equitable and can be healthy, but I guess the main beef that I would have with it is, like, they seem to be leaving the sex part behind in the ownership power play area. You know what I mean? Like, Eiji and Ash are going to have a good, healthy relationship, and it's going to be platonic. and the messaging in there could be like that's part of what makes it wholesome and healthy because they're not having sex. I wish that was part of it too, that like sex can be had, but like it doesn't have to be.
I understand why this father has a bit of faith, because the events of the show have kind of swept him away from having any sort of like intimate moment like that.
Although I will say, Janelle Monáe recently came out and said, "Everything is sex except sex, which is power."
Fair point.
So, there you go. The money's the water.
The actual point I was going to get to was that the issue I take with this particular episode, of where these two disparate ideas of the crime thing and the, you know, the gay romance thing. Previously, that's why they now kind of crash head-on together, like two train cars colliding. And I'm talking specifically about the dinner scene. So, hear me out. This dinner scene, on paper, is terrifying and awful. Because this is like the prelude to horrible things happening. We've already had the scene with Shaw's previously. We know that something bad's going to happen. So, we've got tension running through here from the previous scene. And that immediately evaporates the moment Ash walks in and everyone gives their reaction to him looking beautiful. Am I saying that Ash shouldn't look beautiful or like all that? No. I'm totally okay with how it works in the actual context of the event. I get that, you know, Golzine is making him look like that for his own benefit. You know, prize pet. You know, pretty him up. But then we've got eBay and Max reacting to this. To him like, oh, he's so pretty, and I'm like,
yeah, right,
this is tonal whiplash. Like, I understand we need a bit of downtime every now and then, but this is like not the place to do it. This scene like should be A, completely like silent music wise and B, should feel like you could hear a pin drop. Then we've got like that, and then we've got, this is not related to the boy stuff zappers, but we've got Max like looking at his wine and tasting it, and I'm like, is that meant to be funny? This is not the time. This is absolutely not the time for that. Like, this is the thing, like, this is where the boy love thing kind of comes into conflict with the crime thing, because what we should be having is a very tense dinner scene leading up to what we expect to happen next. I mean, I said before, like, when we got to the lab scene, that I was like, oh god, I know where this is going. And I imagine a lot of people who haven't read Banana Fish before would have immediately put two and two together as I did and thought, oh Jesus, this is what they're going to do. You can see it all mapped out before you. And so you're expectant of that coming about. But then that happens and you're like, it doesn't work. It's really, really weird. Now, again, I get the point here. Like, you know, Ash is a good looking lad and that's the whole selling point of the manga. But there are ways in which this show has weaved them together properly before, and it's not happened in this scene, which I kind of completely forgot about it once we actually got into the dungeon, I'll be completely fair here, and this is probably the only criticism I really have of this episode. But I think it's just a cautionary lesson that it's good and ambitious and very welcome to have two different themes coming together that, you know, intertwine and play off each other and enhance each other. I mean, take any other police procedural show for anime, like Ghost in the Shell, for example, or Psychopass, which was mentioned before. Yeah, they are police procedurals, you know, but they're also about examining technology through these police procedural dramas and how it colours the lives of the people in there and how it changes, like in Psychopass, you know, how it's used to, you know, emotionally suppress people, etc., etc.
Yeah, there are cop shows that aren't as dry, though, that do kind of play around with tone in different ways. I think this is going to be one where I disagree with you, just because, I mean, I understand, I do understand what you're saying, but, like, I was really glad that they cut the tension, because, like, man, just the anticipation was already fucking brutal.
You need
anticipation is not the right word, but, like, the tension, the knowing what's coming, like, there's a lot of anxiety there. And because I mean, but you don't know, of course, the extent of it. And you know, thankfully, they didn't have any silly shenanigans after. That would really be bad
God,
form.
Yeah.
That would be very bad.
That would have been terrible. Yeah,
yeah. So I was kind of glad that was there now. And it's interesting, right? Like, there's a couple different approaches to this sort of thing. Like, Trigun has the one approach where it front loads all of it. like almost all of the silliness is in the first like
11. It's a coping mechanism for the main character. It's actually intertwined with how, you know, him as a person. It's not there just for, you know, silly asides. Like that is literally his defense mechanism to keep him sane.
Well, just sure, right? But like, yes. And as the audience watching the show for 11 episodes, you're like, this is a silly show. And then for the last 15,
then when Diablo kicks in, you're like, oh god,
it's a fucking nightmare of tension and horrible suffering. Or you could do it this way, where you kind of dole it out in little hits, you know, splice it in here and there, pepper episodes with it. I wonder if there's like, I don't think anything is necessarily right or wrong in art. I'm sure that there's like ways you could pull either approach off, you know.
I think it's going to be a case of your mileage may vary on this one. And speaking for myself, it just felt very distracting, but I'm not going to presume, like, you know, that that's a necessarily, I mean, I should point out as well, by the way, that once again, myself and Doc, I would imagine, if I'm speaking out loud, stop, please tell me, we're not strictly speaking the target audience for this material. I mean,
right.
The way it's...
Right.
So, I think that, you know, if you appreciate that, firstly, great, fantastic, that's awesome, and B, you'll probably have a much more favorable reaction to it than I would have. So, don't take it from me saying, like, you know, you're wrong if you like that bit. That's just my observation, and take it for what it's worth.
Okay.
Next point.
My next talking point is fuck this show. Fuck it. I hate it. It's the worst thing. Never. Don't watch it. It will destroy you. It is like, God, I just, oh, like, it just has wounded me. So this episode cut so deep. And it was just such savage torture by Arthur and Golzine. But then there's part of me, like, I can't help but, like, you know, appreciate how the show has like managed to make us care about all these characters so much. I mean, it's speaking for me, and I think you, because there are other anime that, like, let's see, the one that springs.
There are other anime that cannot do this in 9 episodes, in 24. What this did in 9. Yeah. It's honestly embarrassing to be in the same medium against this show. That's how good it is that it can make you care that much this early. I think the only show that immediately springs to mind that I would compare Banana Fish to in terms of getting me engaged and liking these characters is Berserk? 1997, just clarifying. 1997 Berserk. Not even more recent. Screw that. I think that is probably the thing that strikes me as the most relevant comparison for character engagement.
Yeah, no, that's right. What I was going to point out was other anime I can think of that do things to make you suffer, like explicitly, like, you know that they're trying to hurt you, and or that are, maybe that's not the right way to put it, but that they are about suffering.
Steins;Gate.
That's a good and favorable comparison, I guess. So the one I'm thinking of is called Now and Then, Here and There, and
it's but from, here but everywhere.
Right.
That's a confused title. Oh, I got that title.
And
you got it right first time, though. That's impressive.
Hey, it made a mark on me. I still haven't been able to forget it. I've seen it once in, like, when would this have been? Probably, like, 13 years ago. Don't plan to watch it again. But what it tries to do, it just shows a lot of suffering, but to, like, you don't care about the characters as much, but you're still appalled by the suffering because of just how fucking brutal it is. And I just hate that. I do not respect that. 'Cause I didn't care about the characters, or didn't really understand. I don't know, maybe if I do watch it again, maybe, like, something will dawn on me, or I'll appreciate it for different reasons, but, like, fucking yeah, that show, it just kept horribler and horribler things kept happening. And that is, and it made me hurt in a similar way that this show made me hurt, like, in not in terms of how it got there, but the degree of feeling, I guess. And I this show is has just gone about it in a way that I respect much more, again, because it's because I care about the show, because I care about the characters, and I will see it through to the end, and we'll revisit it again.
That's all I ever ask of a show or any material I ever watch. Make me give a shit about the characters, and I'll love it. Like, it's really as binary as that. That, to me, in my opinion, is what you should be using as the groundwork for all of your writing, whatever medium it's in. I don't care about the characters. I'm just going to sit there and I'm going to make jokes about it. I'm going to probably start getting really bored, or I'm going to flat out hate it, or maybe a combination thereof. Get me caring about the characters.
You'll probably flat out hate it. It's hard to make a joke of. I mean, and the worst thing, the thing that lingers in my mind, and like content warnings all, but there's a little girl.
Oh, great! Yeah, great stuff. Yeah,
there's a little girl in that show who is she is raped, and she finds out she is with child, and
great.
She begins to slam her belly with a jagged rock because she does not want this to happen. And it's like just oh God, for like any for people who are sensitive or have empathy, like, yeah, that fucking show, man. And unlike Banana Fish, right, like this show is so like raw and like up in your face, and I feel like it's just so much less subtle. Like, we talked it before about how Banana Fish is so good about leaving a lot of its worst horrors to your imagination, and yeah, how we can appreciate that much more.
I agree.
Yeah, a lot happening in chat at the moment about about the conventions of the genre that it's in, which I mean, we said, like, I don't even know, it's sort of this dual genre. Like, it was originally written as a shoujo manga, like for ladies, but now, of course, it can be, I don't know. It's part crime drama, part gay romance. Yeah. So I don't really know genre-wise, like, what kind of conventions.
I think it's always worth just A, firstly, judge the work on its own merits. And B, I said before about your mileage may vary, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it's literally good or bad. There can be varying degrees of good, varying degrees of engagement, and varying degrees of bad. Maybe it's in the middle, it's just plain fucking dull. Like when I watched Hacker 13. God, that was a...
It's a famous one that you just hate so much.
Sleep inducing, honestly. But anyway, that's all I'll say to that. And now for my next talking point, I believe.
Move on. Wait, Sounder, let's hit it.
Next point.
Go!
Go. All right. So, let's talk about plot holes. Now, I have been noticing recently on the old internet that, you know, everyone seems to be swimming in, that there's been a kind of a counter movement to people getting nitpicky and, you know, such about plot holes in analyses. And to me, I half agree and half don't. I think that there's a kind of contract with fiction whenever you take on board that's unique to each work of fiction as to how much you're willing to tolerate in, like, you know, things like, you know, not making sense. Like, okay, what happened with Lut, where, you know, like, it seems like it's temporally dissonant that he got out before, like, Asia was taken away, but didn't take it. Whatever. That's mad. I was thinking to myself as I was watching the scene in which Ash, you know, was tied up and everything was happening with Shaw and AJ. He gets the gun. And for some reason in my head, I couldn't help this when I was thinking about it afterwards, thinking, why did he not shoot Shorter in the leg? Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing. It's a trick question. Doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Because you said before, like, about how I nitpick and such like that. For me, it tends to fall against character logic, and you have to always understand that sometimes characters can make decisions that, you know, will on paper seem really stupid, but you are never in the situation they're in. To some degree, you know, that still doesn't excuse stuff. I mean, I've complained about that in Franks, for example, where I think you and me had that, you know, blazing row about, you know, fucking heroes bullshit in episode 14. I remember that. I remember that wanker calling his missus a monster. You know, great. Nice one.
Yeah, about whether that was... I remember
Yeah,
that.
Justified.
Please look up the YouTube video if you...
Actually, don't. Let's not. But... In that case, for me, I felt like it had violated that contract I was talking about, where it didn't, you know, it wasn't justified by his logic, his actions, or the build-up to it. And then, funnily enough, it wasn't justified by the outcome of it either. So when I think about this scene now, in which he does, you know, flat-out shoot Shaw as a dead, I can come up with 1,001 different reasons for why he did it, or why he should have done something differently. It doesn't matter, because what I am now interested in is the aftermath of this. I mean, we saw the reaction of Ash holding his hands, Ollie. I have blood on these. I've had to kill my best friend. I'm very curious to see what the ultimate outcome is. I mean, who knows how things could have played out differently if he'd done stuff else. Like, what if he just played shot Arthur dead? I don't know. Who knows what might have happened. That'd have been
the, I would celebrate. I would do a small dance in the confines of my office away from the window so that people could not see me. But I would do it nonetheless.
Exactly. So... For me, I think this is a nice object lesson here with this scene in that, yeah, you can be, you know, nitpicky, you know, cinema sin style. Ding! Doesn't make any
cinema
sense.
Cinema sins. I always laugh when you bring it up. People hate cinema sins.
Yeah. But that's the thing, like...
Right.
I could very well, you know, in actually just, you know... I could very well, like, with this scene, point out 1,001 different actions that Ash should have taken instead rather than shooting Shaw dead. And then I could start counter-arguing by saying, well, he's under dramatic, you know, incredible pressure, and he doesn't know maybe if he shot Shaw in the leg, if he, you know, he would have stopped, so I could talk about all that. Doesn't matter. Sometimes, fiction, the contract that you have, allows you to suspend your disbelief that, because it suggests, and hopefully delivers on it, that there's more to it than that. It's an emotional connection. You know, an emotional outcome of it. Because Law knows, like, we already had what happened with Skip, and we had what happened with Griff. He keeps revisiting them. It's always relevant. What about the scene in which, you know, in the previous episode where Ash was on the rooftop by himself and he was just burying his head in his hands? What's this going to do to him afterwards, and how is he going to rise from it? What's it going to mean for AJ? Like, this is why I can completely ignore that little nitpicky side of my brain, like, you know, well, we could have done something different. I'm more interested in the actual outcome now. So, nice, right. I think, object lesson. I think that's an object lesson in, you know, that plot holes can be relevant sometimes. It's going to be something that you'll have to figure out for yourself. But sometimes you might want to take wider context into account, as well as, you know, the emotional payoff.
Agreed. Do you think Ash is like a, how did Trickster put it?
A magical cowboy? Was that something that cowboy was one of the words I read. Maybe magical, not so much.
You're thinking about that the 2D side scroller puzzle game that we played. I can't remember. It starts with an A that we played earlier this year with the magical cowboy guy, shirtless. Remember? God damn it!
I'm having such a mind blank on that now. That's actually kind of scaring me. I feel like something that specific is something I should remember.
Well, I was playing it around my birthday time, and then you bought it and played through it, and I still haven't finished it.
That was Iconoclast.
Iconoclast, thank you. Yes, that's the magical game.
Very, very good game.
No, so earlier in chat, Ash said that, like, the show prioritizes Ash's objectification for the purpose of achieving catharsis for Japanese women, and that he's like a sort of stand-in for female power fantasy. And I do see the cowboy gangster comment now. Thoughts on that?
I think I'm just gonna have to go back to my original talking point that as long as it doesn't actively impede the tone, mood, or narrative, that's fine. I think that's like I said before, this whole, you know, boil of, you know, gay romance thing intertwining with the criminal elements in which, you know, like, all of the homosexual characters in here, apart from Ash, have been, you know, depicted as being awful, cruel people. And that, of course, is going to be torn down, you know, when we see our, you know, heroes get to engage in a regular relationship. So I don't immediately have a problem with it. It's a case-by-case, scene-by-scene basis, as this show has demonstrated to me thus far, where for every episode apart from this one, it's been entirely spot-on with it. Mm-hmm. But then this happened with the dinner scene, and that's when it became noticeable to the point it was a detriment. It's not a black-and-white thing to me. You can literally have a word, do it right in one episode and do it wrong in the next. It could be completely wrong from start to finish based on flawed reasoning like Franks' politics. By the way, shout out to Nishigori if you're listening, because he claimed to people with a straight face that it was that, you know, he never intended any political messages or any themes in, you know, the entire show's run of like chatting shit, mate. Chatting absolute shit. But anyway, back to the point at hand. Yep, really just a question of moment by moment, scene by scene. That's how I would describe it with Banana Fish. So I'll tell you as we go along, I suppose. If it happens again, I'll let you know. And if there are other bits I like where it swines quite well, like it's done before, I'll also send it.
I apologize. Just typing in chat. And I don't really have a third
next point.
Talking point. But I'll just say, I guess, to discuss and bring it around. So, like, I do hope that, I hope, right, I'm holding out what some may assume is an unreasonable hope, that the show will be somewhat progressive, right? And assuage my worries that it's going to kind of, you know, do things like put the message out there that the gay sex is bad, but the gay platonic relationship is good.
Yeah. Chastity is security.
Yeah. And not even, and it doesn't even seem like a chastity thing, but more like a gay thing.
Be fair, though, and also just by the one heterosexual relationship we've seen is in Tassis in this show, so there is that.
Mm-hmm, that's
if, you
true.
To, if you want to throw that as a counter argument, that's not that true. Really matters, to be honest. I mean, if you want, it's not, no one's keeping score, it doesn't really matter.
But
I do agree. Go on.
Oh, no, so just to finish, so like, yes, I'm hoping that, like, that will be, I think, good. I think that would send, a good message that I would feel good about, and that will be good to see. However, you know, Blue Sea Devotee raises a good point in chat, you know, when she says, like, not everything has to be progressive, and that's entirely true also. And, I mean, you know, I don't think anybody's forgetting that the source material is an 80s manga. Like, if it doesn't, if the story's not changed and it remains largely true to the original kind of vision and intent and plot, like, I think it's just fine that we have this artifact of its time. I think that's entirely fine and entirely entertaining, and I will appreciate it on its own merits. I guess, like, yeah, I'm always hoping for better, for marginalized folks to see positive portrayals of themselves and positive messaging when it comes to their identities.
I agree.
But yeah, it will, like, I'm not going to deduct sort of deduct points or lower my esteem that I hold the show in because it doesn't do that. I mean, I do have that kind of understanding of, you know, again, where we could be looking at a historical artifact here, something that's very much a product of its time. And that, you know, I guess my thing is not everyone that is going to be watching it will understand that. And so that's where I wish it would make.
Your mileage may vary again.
Yeah, I wish not everyone's going to know about, like, you know, this being a 30-year-old story. And so, you know, they might be hurt by some of it, or
I think at this point I should just throw in as well that, just as a reminder, folks, like, both myself and Doc Arsis set, so obviously, you know, we're coming this from perspective that is probably not entirely equipped, or even partially perhaps, to truly talk about this material in a way, like, it's like, you know, with what happened with Frank's, where, you know, I couldn't really say how, you know, hurtful it was about that show's LGBTQ plus depiction, because I myself am LGBTQ plus. So I'll just try and reassure everyone that if you are, you know, if you, as Banana Fish goes on, you find it to be insufficient or even, you know, downright rubbish because of that, that's entirely valid. It's not for me or anyone else to say otherwise. I'll just try and approach it as honestly as I can, as I always have done, and have a couple of cheeky jokes along the way. At no one's expense, I should stress. Anyway, I'm going to have to apologize, folks. We just need to go to a quick break because I am actually kind of knotted up here and I need to... I'll be back in just a moment.
Sorry about that.
All right.
We are back. Okay.
We are back. Sorry about that, folks. It was a struggle to walk the 3 feet to the bathroom, I will say that. Anyway, let's actually move on. Yeah, it's not
okay. No,
I have one talking point after we've done with that one.
To just quickly address a lot of what's going on in chat. So where did all the progressive banana fish is progressive stuff start? I think most people watching it understand the history of it and know that it is a thing from 30 years ago, so it probably wouldn't be. I think a lot of people hoped, whether it's based on hints that the project lead dropped or just speculation based on what people knew about the project lead, that they would make some changes, make some changes to the story. Otherwise than that, I mean, you're not going to get something super duper progressive. You're going to get what you got then, which, you know, I guess for its day, you know, was in some senses progressive, but it was limited what you could publish in the 80s about this sort of thing. And that is why I think that the relationship between Eiji and Ash will be platonic. That's what I'm kind of foreseeing. And like, this is where, so I saw in chat, I forget who said it, so I don't know who to attribute it to, that they thought the message was that sexual assault was bad, not that sex was bad. And I agree that is a way you could interpret it. I think that that is what a charitable person would be going for and would say, but like, because Ash and Eiji never consummate their relationship, we just don't know. Like,
yeah,
that leaves the wiggle room of the other thing, and like, so I don't, you know, to me it's entirely fair game to interpret it that way, because that's, I mean, it sure seems like an easy sort of equation to me.
Yeah,
you've got this kind of relationship on one side and this on the other. One is, you know, the good one, and one is the bad one.
I have mentioned before that, like, this show, pretty much all of the homosexual characters in it, apart from Ash and Eiji, of course, like, they're all criminals. They're all criminals in power. Even, what was it, Marvin? Like, that token guy.
Marvin, I forgot about Marvin.
The man with the neck goiter. And, of course, you know, the criminals in the prison and all that, the people we saw before. Like, you could make the argument, in my opinion, that it is gradually going to blossom out, you know, with this relationship that may even still be platonic, but at least it shows that, you know, it's a counter argument to the narrative that's presented then. Because I think that you can equate criminality with wrongness, and so therefore the association is, because all of these people are so blatantly, you know, like, they're homosexual in a, you know, power play kind of way, ownership kind of way, that it's building that up to tear it down and say, actually, this is the truth of it, this is the wholesome. But I will also say that I am in completely agreement. Well, you're actually quite right there, Slubel. That is true, but the difference is that Ash's criminality is actually based more around just street-level related stuff. It's not him, you know, possessing or owning anyone else. I suppose the argument I should make more, rather than focusing on the criminal element here, is just more that, you know, what is in the relationship? What is the contractual agreement, so to speak, between the parties in question? The agreement between Ash and Golzine, for example, is, well, Ash just, you know, he's told what to do and he will take it, and that's it. Whereas, you know, that's presented as the status quo for all the homosexual relationships seen as far. But when Eiji comes along and, you know, he offers him an alternative, which is, as I've said before, the word is equitable. However, I am in complete agreement with Doc that I do think this material would be well suited and would benefit greatly from exploring the sexual side of things rather than being strictly platonic. Now, I have watched shows before.
It's also funny, can I just say, very quickly, that I think that someone made this point or alluded to this. We are spending a lot of time, and I think a lot of the discourse of Banana Fish spending a lot of time on something that might be actually quite a low percentage of the show, what the show is devoted to. It might be first and foremost a crime drama.
This is true. And also torture porn, you know, as well. I'll just finish off by saying, though, that I'm in agreement with you that I think that it would be worthwhile exploring that avenue. Mm-hmm. I have seen shows in which characters, you know, who are gay do not end up consummating on screen or in even, like, you know, in a hinted kind of fades black way. Yuri on Ice is the one that sticks out to me in particular. But I didn't mind in Yuri on Ice's case. And I'll tell you why I didn't mind in Yuri on Ice's case, because the closing scene of that show was the two of them skating together, which to me was far more intimate than any sort of actual sexual activity.
Yeah.
At least as far as... It's a question, again, of context and such.
Mm-hmm. And that show, you don't have, like, a terrible counter-narrative of what the gays are like, quote-unquote. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there is also that. But we'll have to see as it goes along. All right, I've got one final thing I want to talk about.
Next point.
Okay, let's talk about OPs and openings specifically. So, I would argue that your average viewer of fiction and media these days is probably more savvy than they even realize or would give themselves credit for. Like, you might not, for example, you know, when you watched the lab scene happen, have immediately gone, you know, look at a drug shot her up and then show it there. But you might have, like, started parsing it in your head and started seeing how it out. And then there's also the OP. Now, OPs in anime can tell you a lot of things. They can give you an immediate sense of the show's aesthetic and style. I mean, I think of Kuchu Baranko, for example. If I showed you the OP for that, then that's almost immediately the show's messier, like, laid out. So there you go. Why is this relevant to Banana Fish, you might ask? So, the opening of this show, like, I have a couple of preconceptions about anime OPs, and if it's a two-course show, you'll get a switch halfway through. Sometimes you get more. JoJo's has done that several times, for example. But the thing about the OP is that I already had, of course, witnessed Skip Griff die, and Skip and Griff are not in the OP at all. Shorter is, though. And that completely disarmed me for what was following next. I actually think it's kind of brilliant that it played to that expectation and played against it. Because if you're keeping score, Skip and Griff, you know, not in the OP, that kind of primes you for the idea that anyone who's not in the OP is fair game for death. So there you go. And then next thing you know, Shaw's dead, even though he's featured quite prominently in it. So I really appreciate them doing that with this, just again help disarm it, make it just punch a little more, even in the little bits, because some OPs unfortunately can give away too much. Honestly, even happens in movies. Like, if you've ever seen Suicide Squad, for example, the team has a number of members who all have really fancy intro videos. There's one who doesn't, though, and no prizes for guessing which one dies first. So there you go. So just a small side note there about the OP playing into Shaw's death there, but I really appreciate it. I'll be curious to see when we get to episode 10, which is in my queue, if he's still going to appear there. But we'll find out.
Sorry. Caught red-handed again typing in the chat. Just a dead silence.
Disgraceful. Calling behavior, dog.
Oh.
It's not what we... But anyway, that concludes our discussion, I
believe.
Yeah,
I think that's all, that's all the points I have, for sure.
Yeah, woofed. That concludes our discussion on Banana Fish Episode 9. Oh, boy. I will just say, by the way, that I'm enjoying the show, but I think enough is enough for the time being as far as the suffering goes.
I feel like, we're only in store for more. I really do.
I mean, I don't know how they could possibly do things like that on a point-by-point basis more awful than what happened there, unless it involves Eiji somehow, who could say. But I will say that this is, again, like the kind of thing about the fictional contract that I mentioned before. There's a certain point to which I'm willing to accept, you know, a melancholy mood and that things horrible keep happening, like the show that you mentioned before, the one with the really silly name I can't remember. 91 Days, however, just to give you a counter-example, I was okay with that because that was the show's game plan from the start. I mean, you watched Angelo, like, doing his stuff, and you knew he was already dead. He was just literally a walking husk of a man. His soul was gone. So you knew full well that it was going to be awful stuff happening. That's part of the show's appeal. it was upfront with you about. Banana Fish has said, you know, it's hinting to me that there will be light at the end of the tunnel, but it's got to be careful with how far it pushes. That's the thing that I will say. That being said, let's rate the episode. Do you want to go first, Doc, or shall I?
Why don't you go first?
All right. I'm going to make a confession here. Were it not for that one complaint I had about the dinner scene, this would have been a 5 out of 5.
Woo!
This would have been one of the few.
You
like
me having your heart ripped out.
The thing is, this to me was such a masterful work of build-up. Everything from start to finish was on point. It was the culmination of events leading to this point that told us what Banana Fish was. It played on all the established character relationships. It made me care. It made me feel really awful about what happened, but that's the thing, that's because it intended to do that. It was absolutely massive. Even the little details I joked about, like the fact that fucking Arthur's hair goes up and stuff like that. Like, this to me was just simply textbook. It was perfect. Except for the dinner scene. That unfortunately soured it slightly for me. Well, not massively. So in the end, I am going to give Banana Fish Episode 9 4.5 avocado neckties out of 5.
Very avocado necktie.
I'm so serious. Good. Go back and watch.
It's so
it's
good.
Avocado pan on his neck thing. It's ludicrous. I'm like, Golzine, like, look, I'm probably going to end up looking a little bit like you at some point in the future, given that, you know, the fact we're both... Yeah, I know. But I just think to myself, like, your sense of fashion sometimes is a bit questionable.
Yeah.
I swear, if Golzine ever says the words rich Corinthian leather in this show, I'm never going to talk about it again. Oh, Jesus, fuck. Not down with that.
I want more romance. Blue Sea. I really want more of it. Being a man, I want them. I wish they explored it more, this sort of thing. I mean, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I like the action stuff too. I just like everything the show does, so I just want more of everything the show does well, which I think are both things.
And that's why I'm here for specifically. Like, you know, there's plenty of shows out there that would cater to me with, you know, quality female characters, Macross, all of them. You know, Macross ladies are fantastic.
Well, not all the Macrosses. There's a bad.
Well, okay. There's
one bad one, in my opinion. Just Macross Zero. That's the only bad one.
That's appropriately named.
Rated Zero. Yes, exactly. Yeah. The Lance Boyle joke from Mega Race. We've named our track "The Big Zero" as a tribute to our fans.
Classic. Absolutely classic. I'm actually just going to very quickly throw a point out that I just want to talk about. With regards to how I approach this kind of material, which is not strictly speaking for me, I will say this: I absolutely despise shows that have a lead female protagonist who has a harem of women around them, and the male protagonist usually in these particular shows has not a single endearing quality to his name, apart from that one thing that no one ever knows and suddenly brought out due to unexpected events or circumstances. Yeah,
the stereotypical harem show, right? Yeah.
I absolutely hate that shit. Fucking despise it. The reason, though, that I find shows like Banana Fish appealing, even though I am cis and therefore this really isn't another night sort of thing, is because it's not trying to do the same sort of thing. Relationships, all of them, in my opinion, are always formed through a certain level of adversity. Now, maybe that's a bit of a strong word to use, but even then, that's just literally coming down from the point of, you know, I don't know this person, I'll get to know them. Then I'll get to understand their interests, their flaws and all that, and I'll get over that, you know, I'll accommodate that. So, when I have shows like this that aren't trying to pretend, you know, or make characters who are completely vacuous and yet still, you know, have women fall at their feet, that, to me, is what makes for appealing romance. And that's why I'm actually being drawn more and more to LGBTQ plus material as a cis het man, because it's not trying to pull that bullshit with me. It's not even trying to pull that bullshit with its target audience. And I immensely appreciate that. I appreciate the maturity that it shows. And that being said, I'm not going to preclude the existence of material that is LGBTQ plus that also does do that same kind of thing as the crap I mentioned before. That probably does exist out there.
Sure.
But generally speaking, the more and more shows I watch, this is the more I'm trending towards watching this kind of stuff because it gives me what I want. It's not, you know, trying to play nice. He's not trying to sugarcoat me. He's not trying to make me comfortable. I mean, we said before, like, you know, about how Ash had one particular scene in which, in the previous episode, he said, like, don't touch me. This is why I think that maybe there will be a bit more steel with, you know, maybe not necessarily full-on consensual sex or anything like that, but just, you know, intimacy between mm-hmm. him and Agee.
Yeah.
It's something they'll have to overcome. And the thing is...
And maybe that's that, like... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, but that's like, you know, something that is overcome. Fiction, in my opinion, and I could be wrong on this, should be about challenges that you overcome. And these could be something really, really, you know, tech literal, like non, you know, thematic, like we've got to blow up the enemy fortress, simple as mm-hmm. that. Or it could be barriers that you put up inside yourself. Barriers that characters have that need to be torn down so that they can truly embrace who they are. And I think for me as well, one of the other great appeals, like, you know, of LGBTQ fiction is that, for me, I'm a big fan of, you know, wanting to have a self-identity, you know, to stick yourself out there, which is what the other kind of show is never about. It's not about making yourself stick out. It's about, you know, people dragging themselves down to your level.
Right, Franks. Right. They will discover, everyone else will discover how special you are one day.
Yeah.
And as opposed sweep to, you know, off your feet.
Yeah, as opposed to, you know, embracing what makes you interesting and unique. And that's why stuff like Banana Fish appeals to me, because it's still, regardless of my own sexuality, regardless of the fact that I'm not of the sexuality of the target audience or even of the gender, it's still about, to some extent, embracing your identity, embracing what makes you a good person, what makes you a better person, coming out from that particular, you know, mold that you're trapped in. In this case, Ash is, you know, basically being owned as property. AG embracing his own, you know, identity and sexuality and trying to deal with his own previous traumas. This is why this stuff appeals to me, and that's why that stuff doesn't. It's not about that. It's just, okay, we got waifu 1, we got waifu 2, we got waifu 3, vanilla, strawberry, chocolate, mint, take your pick. You can have arguments by Discord all fucking night.
That stuff has its place, but I agree with you. I know what you're saying.
It does, but I don't think, you know, people should approach it with any modicum of seriousness and treat it as, you know, genuine, you know. Maybe this is really cruel to say, but honestly, I don't think that stuff deserves anything more than just a snuff look at it. It's just, you know, comfort food.
It depends
food,
what you need.
Junk.
Yeah, I guess it depends what you
Mac.
Need, you know.
It's a Big Mac. That's the way I describe it.
Or maybe, yeah, I mean, in one sense, you could that, but for another person, it could be like a blankie, you know, that they, it could be a coping thing that they sort of need to level off of, you know. I'm never one to begrudge, like, people kind of looking to junkie escapism, you know what I mean?
I won't begrudge people doing that. Every, you know, whatever people need to get through their day, that's fine. But to me, I think that, you know, the medium could be doing so much better. So that's just my side point there, just to explain, you know, my approach with it, given, you know, my various attributes. Although I also like Banana Fish B.O. because it's just got the fucking ridiculous tension building, you know, and the invested characters.
God.
That's always a good thing to have. Anyway, would you like to give your racing dog?
Yeah, I'm also going to give it 4. 4 petty power mad scientists out of 5.
Wait, did you give it less than me?
Did
I
you
was
give
4.5.
Oh, you gave it 4.5? I'm going 4.
Wow, yeah. That's a rare occasion. Just for those of you who might not have caught our streams of thought on Nesshu no Suzume, MMO Junkie, or of course, you know, the show that shall not be named.
Fucking, we need MMO Junkie in our lives after this show. Holy shit.
Do.
We need some kind of, speaking of warm blankets, we need like the hot cocoa of anime after this show.
That is such a good way of describing it. But for those of you who might not have seen those and they're joining us for Banana Fish, generally speaking, I grade lower than Doc on pretty much everything. Like, I reckon if I were to just spitball the average, like, or the standard deviation, I'd say it's, like, not 0.75, maybe 1.
Yeah, I'm a high grader, for sure.
So having me grade higher than Doc, especially significantly higher, fucking hell, what's going on? Like, you know, is this opposite day or something?
No.
I kid.
I do think it's a really good episode. I guess I just, was more distracted than usual about how...
You did mainly mention about Arthur's theatrics, you know, and that he was
how
hamming
crappy,
it
like that the test you know, would have gone down and how, like, you know.
Yeah.
Banana fish really doesn't seem, like, suitable for the market that they want to put it in, or at least that they I understand that they want to put it in. Banana fish, the drug, not the anime. And then, and apart from that, like, that was so much of the episode that there wasn't, like, a lot more to it. And so, I just deducted a little bit for that in my mind. But, I mean, it's a fantastic episode.
For sure.
It knocked me flat, you know, and I'm ready for more.
Oh, for sure.
Doc's vacation made you harder to please. Yes, exactly. Exactly. There's not enough Japanese professional wrestling in this episode to give it a 5.
Oh god, if that actually turned out to be a thing, like, then I think that you would probably, like, this would be your best show ever.
Not enough Yuji Nagata. Listen, Japanese wrestler Yuji Nagata has been in multiple anime that weren't about wrestling. He just appears as himself, Yuji Nagata.
Fair enough.
Who I love.
I mean, if you could do it, why not? Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, Emmys, thank you very much as always for listening. Yeah. We'll be back tomorrow.
Oh, no, wait. We have to talk about the polls.
Oh, we do.
We still have to talk about...
The polls.
We have to talk about...
Twitter poll.
The Twitter poll. We cannot end before we mention them. We've posted them in chat, but, you know, for anyone not looking at chat or watching the VOD, you will have a week from now to vote. And... it's going to be funny when we do episode 10 tomorrow. Yes, we're going to stream tomorrow, episode 10.
Yeah.
Polls will still be early days, so vote now. Vote early and often.
Beep, beep, beep. Push that button.
Yes. Smash that like button.
Tap that.
We've only got two. I was only able to come up with two polls.
To be fair, we're going to have more polls tomorrow, I imagine, after we watch episode 10. So that actually works out quite nicely.
That's true. And they'll be all kind of clustered together. So, polls for episode 9. If Golzine was the captain of a cruise ship, would you set sail with him? Right now, 0% say anchors away, and 100% say abandon ship. Those are the choices.
I'd sink the damn thing while I was there.
Sabotage! In the poll that I've put up in honor of being stimulated by this interesting idea that was posed in chat about Ash as kind of a female power fantasy character, I've asked, is Ash Link's character meant to be female power fantasy? And at the moment, it's 50-50. So I don't know. I think whether or not you agree, it's interesting to think about. I don't know. I have not. I just had not considered that before now. And again, like, not a lady, so, like, obviously that, you know, that's probably not going to be the first thing that like occurs to me. It's much easier. I mean, maybe for everyone to point out male power fantasy because it's so ubiquitous, and we're all kind of trained to, like, see it. Yeah. But I hadn't thought about Ash in that way. So that's, I'll have to think about that some. So thank you, Trickster, for posing that interesting idea.
Indeed. And thanks to everyone who's joined us in chat to talk about the episode or to shoot the breeze, talk shop about it. It's much appreciated. As I say, we'll be back tomorrow. Not sure what time yet, but we'll let you know. We'll be discussing episode 10 of Banana Fish. In the meantime, Doc, where can people find you?
At The Subtle Doctor on Twitter. If you want to talk about anything and everything, I'm here.
Fair play. And you can find me at Shane1010. Feel free to talk to me about, you know, like, why I'm such a masochist and why I like, you know, watching shows that, you know, just... make me weep into my armchair.
They're going to suggest a lot of, like, anime where shit happens, like horrible stuff.
Oh, I've already
occurs.
Had some crappy shows suggested to me that I'm going to, you know, filter out for the upcoming Halloween special. Yay.
No, people are going to suggest good shows where that hurt you.
Anyway, from me, from Doc. Thank you all.
Where
again,
are you? Where are you on Twitter? Did you say?
Hmm?
Did you mention your Twitter?
Oh, Look, I told you guys I was sick, so there you go. That's my excuse.
We're bad. I've got the lurg. Brand.
I've got the lurgy. I've got the lurgy. That's the thing. You can find me at Shaden1010 on Twitter. I also have a Curious Cat, which is CuriousCat.me/Shaden1010. So again, feel free to throw questions my way. Ask me whatever you like. Just a quick shout out as ahead of time. If you happen to be interested in fighting game stuff, I will be in attendance at Revolution 2018 in London, which is at the end of this month. It's Friday 28th, it starts. Why is this important, you might ask? It is one of the big stops on the ARC Revolution World Cup. And it was announced at Evolution 2018. And it's a big deal.
ARC Revo. ARC Revo.
Yeah. So I'll be participating and lending my vocal talents to it. So keep an eye out for that. Otherwise, as always, thank you all very much for watching, everyone. Hope you all have a great evening and praise Shiver, everyone. See you as the universe.
Goodbye. Mwah. And good night. Ugh.